make a mistake in the year 2008, I hope.
Yeah, 2008.
Yeah. And we are on Sanhedrin, Daf Ches Amud Aleph.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to simply summarize a couple of things that we learned last week for the benefit of those who weren't here. They're all very interesting things. Okay. First of all, we learned that, you know, last week we read Parshas Tzolofchad, and of course we're going to read it again this coming next Shabbos, okay, about the daughters of Tzolofchad, right? So the question is, why is it that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know how to answer the question when they came to him, and they said,
"Go into God, yes, God."
Right. So, at any rate, they give two answers. Answer number one: it's not that Moshe was so stuck up, though. According to one authority, this is why the Rebbeinu Shlom punished him by saying, you know, he doesn't know how to answer this question. But in his defense, the love of authority comes to say that in reality it's because Moshe Rabbeinu said, look, what I don't know I'll learn, he says. But they wanted to give credit to Benos Tzolofchad, because to the daughters of Tzolofchad.
Oh, okay.
They're good girls, right? They had a very important point to make, and so they wanted to give them honor in the Torah by having this little parsha, in other words, you know, this segment of the Torah written in their honor, okay? And by the same token, then, we had also the story of the Bekoshesh, the man who picked up, wood on Shabbos.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And again, Moshe didn't know what to do. We put him in jail to find out, you know, what to do. And, eventually, of course, he was punished. But they said, that's in order to show, you know, that good things, you know, happen to good people, and bad things happen to bad people. Okay, so this is one thing that we learned. And then another thing that we learned is that also Moshe Rabbeinu was told, you know, look, you have to appoint a successor, and of course, you know, Yehoshua, right? Of course, yes. We read that last week again also in the Torah, okay? And so Moshe Rabbeinu says to Yehoshua, he says to him, okay, you together with the Zikna Yisrael, you know, you'll figure out what to do. So the Rabbeinu Shalom tells Yehoshua, he said, no, you have to be the boss, because Dabor Echad Lador, the Einstei Dabor Lador, there can only be one leader in the generation, not two. Authority means that there's one person who is ultimately responsible, and you can't.
Nah,
it's not democracy in that sense, even though democracy is it. There are other democratic ideas, after all. If you remember, Moshe Rabbeinu says, "Me yitein kolam an Hashem neviim," with that, all the people of Israel that were all prophets, halavai that should have right. So the God Spirit should rest upon each and every one of them, and so on. Right. So, that being the case, it's another thing we learn. Then, from the point of view of halacha, so they had another business. The question that says over there is Zimun Mishlosha. The Mishnah says. Remember, Mishnah gives a list of things which are three, and then afterwards it goes on things that require more than three. Okay? Alright, so mention something that Zimun Mishlosha. So the question is, what do we mean by Zimun? So, do we mean that, for example, benching, to bench with a mezuman, do you have to have a minimum of three?
Yeah,
that we already know. But the Baraisa says Zimun, right? And then also it says another Zimun is Mishlosha. So the question is, what is the other Shlosha? What is its reference to, to the section of Sanhedrin, after all? Zimun Mishlosha, you need three people for benching, a minimum. This belongs to brachas, that's where you find it, okay? There's a whole chapter devoted to all the brachas that you make after a meal, including grace after meal, you know, okay? So that belongs over there. So what is it doing over here in Sanhedrin? The answer is that here they're talking about that if the Bezdin sends a summons, it has to be in the name of the three judges. They have to agree, you know, that they are summoning the person to come before them for litigation, and it should be signed by all of them. However, it says that this is true when court is not normally meeting, but they want to have a special class, a special session, I mean, and, you know, and judge. But if, on the other hand, it's a day when the judge is, normally meeting, and people know that, you know, the court is in session at that time, then only one signature is necessary in order to summon somebody to appear before them. So that's another thing. Then, the next thing that we had is about Dine Knossos. What is Knossos? Knoss is literally a fine. How does a fine differ from the usual litigation? So, usual litigation, you know, they present their arguments and so on, the case is settled, not say greatness, you know, whatever the decision may be. But with the Knoss, the Torah has imposed a special penalty. And the cases that they mention over here at this particular point happens to be the case of either the Ganav, you know, who steals something, or Ganav, steals something, they catch him. So what does he have to do? He has to repay twofold. That's what we call kefal. Kefal means double the amount, okay?
Kefal.
Chof pei lamed, kefal. Right, okay? So that requires a special a court of three judges in order to determine what is the amount that has to be assessed. Okay? And another case is also the case that the Torah mentions about if a man steals a sheep and then he slaughters it, right? Then in that particular case, he has to give back four sheep to the owner. And if he steals an ox, that he has to give back five oxen. Sages explained the reason why is because a sheep is valuable for two things, for meat and for its skin, for the wool that it has. But the ox actually is a shvera arbiter, you know, he has to plow fields and everything else. And so therefore the ox actually is worth more to its individual owner, and therefore if you steal that, then therefore you have to pay back fivefold.
There's more meat on the market than there's
not. Yeah, also that's true. Okay. Now, the point is, however, that we require a court of three, but three what? So they say, three hedyotos, three ordinary people? No, you have to have mumchim for this. Here, in other words, for Dine Knossos, you have to have people who have already received smicha from the Nossi in Eretz Yisrael, or from the Reish Galusa, as we learned several pages back, you know, in Babylonia and so on. So and these are expert judges, that they, you know, they're expert in Jewish law. So they have to vote. So this is what we learned last week. So now we're down at the bottom of the page, and now we come to another subject matter, which actually runs over a couple of pages. And that's a matter also really in connection with Knoss, special fine imposed. What is the Knoss? The Knoss is the case of the Motzi Shemra. Now, what is a Motzi Shemra? It means someone who slanders somebody. Okay. But specifically, we're not talking now about ordinary slander, that's bad enough, but we're talking about the husband who comes to Beis Din after the wedding night, and he says, "Lei matzasi levitcha besolim." Right? I did not find virginity, signs of virginity, in your daughter. Right? So, naturally, the daughter's parents are going to contest that. Okay? Because the implication is, you know, that he was getting damaged goods. Right? Okay. So, what does the Torah say in that case?
Torah.
There are different things. First of all, I'll give you what the Torah has to say, okay? What the Torah says is that if they find out, you know, that the guy is a liar, he's only trying to get out of paying, you know, what he owes as a consumer to the woman, then it's written over there, V'yonchu oisei meyor kesef, right? That they fine him 100 mana, right? Which, you know, that's more than the zoos, I don't have to tell you. Because 100 zoos make 1 mana, so it's a very substantial sum of money. And he can't divorce her, I mean, you're stuck with her. Okay.
That's not enough for pain and suffering.
All right.
Pain and suffering being embarrassed and so forth.
Okay. But the complication comes in because of the next sentence that says, if, on the other hand, she really did commit adultery before marriage, okay, then in that case, you know, she is liable to the death penalty, okay? So, this is where the problem comes in.
Well, don't they use that bit of water there?
No.
Why not?
Because they haven't been married long enough. Also, there are different things, the different factors. You see, he didn't say to, remember, we studied Sota.
Yeah.
Okay. He has to warn her in the presence of 2 witnesses. He says, you don't hang out with that guy.
Yeah, okay.
And so then,
he's getting married,
gets the report back, you know, that she did hang out with that guy in spite of the warning that he had given her. You understand?
Right.
That has nothing to do with before the warning, only with what happens after the warning. But here he didn't. I mean, he comes in the morning after the wedding and says, your daughter ain't a virgin. Wasn't a virgin, okay?
Well, after the wedding,
it's a different story. All right, it's a different story. Okay. Now, obviously, he has to have witnesses to stand up also if he claims, you know, that she committed adultery. But if not, then what is he trying to do? He's trying to get out of paying the 200 zoos that he's expected to give in the according to the consumer.
Yeah.
So now the question is simply this. Is this a civil case, or is this a criminal case? You understand? This is what the subject, the problem is right now.
Whether it's civil or criminal?
Whether it's civil or criminal. If it is civil, in other words, he only wants to get a reduction of guilt, then in that particular case, how many judges do you need?
3.
You need 3. But if it's criminal that he accuses her that she committed adultery and he has witnesses to back it up,
you need 23.
So then in that case you need 23, exactly. This is what the problem is.
The adultery was from the time the ketubah was signed to the time that they actually...
Okay, you ask a very good question. The problem comes in from a different angle. Okay. Yeah. When did he write the ketuba? He wrote a ketuba at the time when they had what we call eros. In other words, betrothal. Okay? Now, he didn't immediately live with her. The practice was in those days to wait, let's say, a year between the time of erosin and the time of nisuin. Okay? Why? So, it would give him the opportunity to build a home, get established in business, arrange for the ultimate wedding party, which was called the Suyid. So, you know, that's when you make the Sheva Brachas at that time. You understand? Of course, we combine everything into one shot. But in those days, they were separate. One was Erison, where they just recited the 2 blessings of betrothal, and the woman received a ketubah, okay, to testify the fact that they are now husband and wife, even though they haven't lived together yet. And then when the nisuin place, so then that would be under the chuppah, and you know, that was symbolic of the fact that they're entering into their own home now and establishing their own home. So that his intimation is what? That between the time that the engagement took place and the time that he married her finally and they entered the wedding chamber, so she had sinned during that time. This is the thing that he's claiming, okay?
So
yeah.
So therefore, if all he's trying to do is get out of the ksuba, it's just a monetary matter.
Right.
And if it's adultery, then it becomes a capital matter. It's like
that's correct.
Like murder.
Adultery is punishable by death if, as we'll see.
Right.
You have to have adequate warning, you have to have witnesses,
right,
etc., and so on and so forth.
Oh,
you,
never happened, right.
You know, you're hedging around with this, that, and the other thing, but theoretically it could be. That's unfortunately.
Mm.
Okay?
Yeah.
This is what the problem is. I mean, there's a difference between the theory of the law and between the actuality of the law, but still, this is the theory. Okay.
Right.
So that, therefore, this is what we're dealing with now. At near the bottom of the page, over here.
Right.
It says, V'chachomim ha'imrim, right, the sages say, Motzi shemra v'yesem b'shlosha. In other words, the Chachomim say, not three judges, but the way the Mishnah said it, right, but they disagree. They say that you have to, if it's a case of the Motzi shemra, then you have to have a court of 23 judges. That's what it says. Okay. So now, the question is, first of all, the chiyesh bo dinin nefoshes by Have. All right. Even if it were to be a capital case, but what is the actuality at this point? In reality, he didn't come prepared to claim that she was that she was an adultery and he has proof and everything. He didn't come prepared to that. So if he's not prepared to that, so why did the Chachamim say that you have to have 23 when all, according to the Mishnah, all that you need in order to judge the case are three judges? Of course, it's only a domestic matter. You know, it's not criminal at this point that we're talking about.
The
monetary.
Yes, right, monetary.
If the person, the male ever accused of adultery?
Is the male ever accused of adultery? I'm sorry to say no.
That's the question I
That's a Gemara in Sota.
The same thing in the
Sota. Says the whole reason why the whole business fell apart is because the men were also committing adultery. So, I mean, how could they demand a higher standard from the wife than they demand from themselves? Right. This is what the Gemara in Sota eventually comes to a conclusion. But, you know, technically the answer is no.
Can I ask you a question?
A man is accused of adultery, however, if it's with an Ashes Ish.
If it's with what?
An Ashes Ish. If he has, right. If he
has,
right. If he has an affair with a married woman,
then
he's an adulterer. Then in that case, he's also liable to the death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. But I'm not. We weren't talking about. We're talking only about the husband at this particular point.
Motzi shemra is only in cases of involves only cases of marriage. I mean, you can defame somebody without marriage.
You're absolutely right, but that's not what we mean by this particular
motzi
case.
Shem.
Right. We apply it as a general rule.
Right.
We say motzi shemra. You know, as we say, why do people suffer leprosy?
Leprosy.
But they are mitzora, right?
Yeah.
So we say mitzora, this is mnemonic, you know, to tell us, you know, motzi shemra. In other words, they suffer leprosy because of the fact that they slandered other people.
They slandered somebody.
Right, right. Okay. But here we're talking about the technical motzi shemra.
The specific case here.
The specific case, right. The case that the Torah alludes.
Right.
Okay. So, all right, so the first question is, so what do we need a court of 23? Well, we're doing three guys. So, here comes answer number one to the question, because there are going to be 100 answers.
100
Maybe
answers.
Not 100.
We'll
see,
anyway.
There are many, right? I don't know if we'll even get through half of them tonight. All right. The first one is the one about Ulan. Omar Ulan. All right. Who was a great Babylonian scholar?
Yes,
And he says, he says, the machlokes is about choshishin lelaz. Choshishin means that we are afraid or we suspect lelaz. Lelaz means in this particular case that the word is going to get out that so and so is talking about his wife, that she was not a virgin, and people are going to hear about it, and in that case, if there are any witnesses, So maybe they'll come to the court and they'll testify.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? So that's the Choshesh in the laws. Maybe the word is going to get out, and so witnesses will appear. So if witnesses appear, then according to the Chachamim, this is why we have to have a court of 23 judges. Okay? But this is Machlokes. Good. Yeah?
How can there be witnesses?
How can there be witnesses? That's a good question, but the answer is maybe they saw her in a compromising situation. What are we going to tell you? Right.
Okay.
But that's the idea. That's what we mean by Choshesh L'Las. Maybe the word is going to get out and the people
are worried about information getting out.
Right. So at any rate, Rabbi Meir, who presumably is the anonymous author of the Mishnah, in most cases, they say Stam Mishnah, which means if the Mishnah is anonymous, it's Rabbi Meir. Okay? So presumably it represents the view of Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir saw our Ein Choshesh L'Las, according to Willa, that Rabbi Meir does not believe that people are going to appear because they heard about this case. Okay? The witnesses are not going to show up. And so therefore, why do you need a court of 23? Three judges are enough. All that the guy wants to do is to try to get a reduction in the ksuba. I mean, a ksuba, you know, when you write a ksuba, okay, it depends on the status of the woman as to how much you write in there, okay? Because if she is a basula, if she's a virgin, then in that particular case, then the ksuba you write, you know, that you give Mosayim Zuz, right? 200 Zuz. That's the settlement, you know, that the husband is making for the wife, okay? What if, on the other hand, she is a divorcee, or a widow, or she's a convert? Understand? Then in that particular case, it's only 100 Zuz. So, at best, what is he going to get? He'll get a reduction of 100 Zuz. If he claims that, you know, she wasn't a virgin. That's the best that he can get. So for that, according to Rabbi Meir, what do you need 23 judges for? Three are enough and not worried that somebody's going to show up and so on. But that's Rabbi Meir's opinion.
Yeah.
Okay. The Rabbanon, but the rabbis, meaning, you know, the Chachamim who are mentioned over there, so Sabri Choshesh L'Las. They do hold Choshesh L'Las, that the word will get out and witnesses will appear, and that being the case, then it's going to turn into a criminal case, right? One that could involve capital punishment, and therefore that's why you have to have 23. So this is the first opinion, okay, that they mention. Rava Amar, Rava says the following. He makes an emendation, if you wish, to the previous one. He says, Kulei Almo L'Las L'Chayishinim. He says, Taka, nobody, he says, really is concerned that, you know, that the word is going to get out and that Edom are going to appear and so on. So, the question is, if that's the case, why do the Chachamim say that we have to have 23, right? So he says, Hocha, in our case, when the Chachamim say 23, it's for a different reason. It says, "Bechoshishin lichvoidon shall rishonim kamif legeim." We're concerned about the reputation of the first group of judges who were summoned. This is what the Machleker says. What does he mean by that? By that he means that, according to the Chachamim, you start the case with how many judges? 23. Okay? So, you start with 23, according to Chachamim, and we're not worried that witnesses are going to show up necessarily, but we are concerned with their reputation. What are you going to do if no witnesses ever show up? Okay? So then what? So we want to show respect to the 23 who were there, according to Rava. And what are we dealing with in this particular case? He says, Kigon, for example, the Ichdiv Bey Esmitlasa, right? Lebedon did in the Fashis. The husband gathered together 23 judges in order to you know, to judge a capital case? The evildoer. And no witnesses showed up. Okay? So the Amaluhu, Dayanoli Miho Dinimamores. So he says to these judges, at least let judge me on a civil case, right? So at least I can get something out of it, okay?
the complainant, right? Yeah.
Okay, so that therefore, if what am I going to say?
So if
the judges don't want to hang around because of that, you're casting aspersions on them. Okay.
But what about you say casting aspersions on a woman?
At first we were casting aspersions on the woman. Now we're not casting aspersions on them. We're casting aspersions on the judges.
But he's bringing charges. He hasn't proven anything.
He wants three judges at least, or something like that. What do you mean three? You had 23. They got tired of waiting around for judges and something like that. So you're going to say something that they were no good or something because it says at least. So, according to him. You don't keep 23 judges around in order, you know, to simply judge a case which would involve only three. This is what he's trying to say.
Of course,
he's defaming her character.
She's having to hang around.
But the point is, I mean, that she...
How can he prove that she wasn't a virgin?
How can he prove?
That she wasn't a virgin.
He can't prove it. Parents might... prove it, you know, that the Torah, they say that, you know, force of Hasimla, that they take the bed sheet, they and so on. Rashi says that not literally, only it means that, you know, that the case is quite clear that, you know, the husband had nothing to talk about, right?
That's right.
Yeah, that's how Rashi understands. Correct.
The woman,
right. Well, right. So the damage is that her father gets the geld. And she still gets the full ksuba that she's entitled to.
He can't divorce her.
I mentioned that.
It's a bigger punishment for her.
She has to stand around with somebody who humiliated her.
Right.
And is not going to really love her, and she'll have eventually to try to give her a get.
You're right. I mean, the point is, under those circumstances, All right. She can come to the Besdin afterwards and say, this man is mistreating me and everything else and so on and so forth. And maybe they could persuade him one way or another, you know, to give her again. That's a very different story. But voluntarily on his part, he can't divorce her. Not unless, you know, the Besdin itself acts in that way. Right, yeah. What did you say?
Is there any, what if the guy is a real louse? He beats her. He doesn't feed her. He doesn't support her properly.
Needless to say, she goes to the Besdin and she puts in a complaint.
Yeah, what happens then?
And either they can force him. Once upon a time, the Besdin had power.
Yeah.
There's an expression in the Talmud that says, "Koifet oso." In other words, they can put pressure on him to the point where eventually he agrees and he says, "All right, I'm willing to give her again." That is a possibility. All right, we're ready for the next slide over there. Omen Bays.
When you think about living in a small town, the area where people knew each other, there's a different. Not regulate, but you could enforce a code of living. Life was more simple.
Yeah, right. The Besdin really had much greater authority back in the old days. It lost it, you know, due to the fact that, you know, we're living in Golis. It's as simple as that. And Eretz Yisrael right now, there's a certain amount of authority that religious courts have, but nowhere near what they had back in the old days. Because, you know, it's competing with a civil court system that you
have
in Israel.
You don't have the people to sit on the base.
Well, you have great chachamim. But again, I mean, the great Chachamim of today, they don't have the authority that the Mismachim of 2,000 years ago had, you see. Right. Yeah, that's true. They have Dayanim. Yeah, the Dayanim who sit in the courts. That's correct. But, you know, they sort of take orders at times from people like Harad and Yoshev and so on. Yeah. But you're right. I mean, it's Dayanim themselves, I mean, who are the judges in the religious courts. Yeah. I'm sure you had a chance to study it when you were in Israel over there.
It's really interesting. I remember
So they ask Akasha about this because now they quote a Baraisa. Okay. Actually, it's quoted from Tosefta, but that's all right. Okay. Chachamim Oimrim, Tvo Momon Bishlosha, Tvo Nefoshes Vyes Bishlosha. Now, this to me makes a great deal of sense. Which means that the sages say, it all depends what we are talking about. If all that he comes in is with a claim for money, because he has no witnesses or anything like that, but just, he wants a reduction, then in that particular case, you only need three judges to judge that. But if he comes in and he says that, she's committed adultery and I have proof, etc., etc., I have witnesses and proof, etc., etc., then in that particular case, then you have to start with a court of 23. Now, this is how the Tosefta says. I mean, it's a little bit different from what we said on the previous page, because on the previous page we said that the Chachamim agreed that you start always with a court of how many? With 23 you start, not with 3. And here, this Baraisa that they quote, now it's only depends on what he's asking for. Okay. No, so needless to say, now they try to comment on this. So he says, Bishlema the Rabba. If we go according to Rabba, then Tvoy Mamin Techilo, Bishlesha, Tvoy Nefesh Techilo, Afilo Mamin Bi Esrim Bishlesha. So according to Rabba, he says, if he wants money, right? What do you mean? He starts with the call of 3. Or he wants a capital case, he starts with 3. He says, Afilu Mamon. Even only to judge for Mamon. He starts with how many? Be'esu Mishlosha. So in that case, Elalu Lakasha, in that case, then it's Akasha Anula. So Omar Rava says, Aniva Rishiba Chabura. I and the great lion and my Chabura. Meaning in my company, Targimna. We explained what this means. Umanu, and who am I talking about? Who's this great lion? It says, Rav Chiya Barab. Okay. So it says, Hocha B'Maskin. What are we dealing with in the case that we're talking about? It says, Shehevi Habal Edim Shezinsa. The husband brings witnesses that she committed adultery, right? The Havi Ha'ov, but the father comes in, and what does he do? He brings witnesses, Adam, the Hizimum Liyede Habal, and they say that the witnesses that the husband brought are a bunch of liars. Okay?
So who makes the decision now?
That's a good question, all right? So, naturally, that being the case, now you're dealing with another area that they learned about, the Gemara's Makos, where they devote a great deal of questions, to the whole business of Edom Zomim. Okay, Amim Zomim. In other words, witnesses. There are two different types of witnesses. One type of witness, we say that simply Machichishim says that. Right. They disagree with each other, what it is. So that's not Adam Zoberman. No. That's only disagreement. Now, naturally, you don't know how to do it. Who do you accept? You accept this testimony? You accept this? You don't know whose testimony to accept. So you don't have anything to judge at that particular point until maybe some others will show up, eventually. But with Adam Zoberman, these guys are a bunch of liars and they are hired to be liars. So if we can prove that they are liars based on the fact that witnesses come in and say, Imanu Hayisem, you were with us, not over there when that happened, but you were with us at this and this time and this and this place. So in that particular case, what is the law of the Torah? The law of the Torah is, Vasisem lo kasher zomam lasos liyom. That's how you have the word zomam, zomam. So you have to, right, you punish them with the punishment that they had intended to inflict upon the other one. Okay? So this is what he's saying. Here it's not a question of just contradictory judges, contradictory witnesses, but it's a question that the father brings in witnesses and they prove the fact that the husbands were Edom Zobimim. So in that particular case, now we have a different situation. Because what was the intention in bringing in that the husband brought in? No. His intention was in order to have her penalized with a death penalty.
Oh, really?
Well, that's why he brought in witnesses.
Right.
So that therefore, now the court of 23 has to judge the Edom Zomimim.
Oh,
boy. And said instead of the punishment that it should have been.
Then.
Yeah. Theoretically, the answer is yes. Okay, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because obviously, this it becomes extremely serious.
Right.
He's the one that paid the money.
He should get penalty,
sure. Right. Yes.
He's involved too.
He is, no question. But yes.
Thank you. What I want to ask you is, at this time, do they still have the? Because the Beit HaKnesset didn't exist anymore, do they still have the option of the procedure for a soul tie?
No.
Okay, so now you're only left with this. That makes it
very drastic. When did the whole business of soul tie cease? It ceased shortly before the end of the second Beit HaMikdash. First of all, the Sota had to come to the Beis HaMikdash. He had to bring a Minchas Kenos, a Bali offering, if you remember,
in an
ordinary basket instead of the dawn basket, and etc. Right, exactly. So that ceased. And part of the reason why it ceased is, as we said, because the husbands too, there were no bargains either. Okay? But it also seems because that without the Beis HaMikdash, you couldn't do it. Can't do it. Okay. Yes.
When we talk about this, if you remember, the Sota, you didn't have to show, the witnesses did not have to see adultery. They only had to see concealment, all right?
Yes.
It could be inferred that it was
correct.
Now, here with this adultery, this niyu, did the witnesses actually have to testify to seeing adultery per se?
Yeah.
They did, wow.
Yeah, they'll have to testify that they actually saw her.
But these guys are lying now,
you see.
Because I say here, it's a little different from what we had in the case of Sota. Yeah.
Wow.
It's not exactly the same case.
Wow, they
have
to
testify.
Right.
That's a pretty
nice example. Of course it is. This is why, a good deal of the law that we have over here is really more theory than anything else.
More. Uh-huh.
It's more theory, than it is practicality.
Yeah.
There's no question about that.
Right.
This we can understand. That's easy enough to understand. Right. But, the death penalty, we have not been in any position to inflict a death penalty in more than 2,000 years or something like that,
So, what is the final decision here?
We didn't get to the final decision.
Okay.
Everybody keeps adding his own twist. Okay. Yeah.
No?
Okay. So, anyway, now that we have this business with the Adam, so let's finish at least, the next line or two over here. All right? So, Borlik Bois Momen Mibal. So, the father, he wants to get his money from the husband, so that requires bishlosh, that requires a quota of three. Women come the foshers, but you know, to get the death penalty for the Eidim Zerbamin, this requires the Esra Mishlosha. It has to be a court of 23. Okay. All right, I think I'm going to stop at this point. But all right, so now, tonight is the 30th of July, in the year 2008. We're continuing in the Gemara Sanhedrin, Daf Ches Amud Beis, 8b. Okay. Again, reminder, everything would be so simple if it was only a question, does the guy want money? So if in that particular case, there would be a court of three would be enough in order to determine, you know, that let's say that she has sinned and as a result she loses part of her ksubah, okay, instead of 200 zuz, so you know, the claim goes down to 100 zuz. That would be simple. If he actually had witnesses, you know, that she had committed adultery then in that particular case, that already would require 23. But the problem is that they're still trying to figure out who is who, who's on first base and who's on second base, who wants 3 and who wants 23. Okay, and so now we continue with more ideas along the same subject. But incidentally, we'll come to some very important principles as we go along over here. As I say, it gets a little complicated, there's no question, because everybody throws in his 2 cents, you know.
Throwing in 2 cents, I suggest you
Right, okay.
If a court of three's size, if it's a monetary value,
right.
But who decides whether it's monetary or not?
This is a good question. That's why they're arguing about the point.
Right.
According to Rabbi Meir, if he didn't originally make any claim that she, you know, that he had witnesses that she had committed adultery, then in that particular case,
well,
there's nothing you do. It would only be a court of three. That's Rabbi Meir's opinion, okay?
Right.
But the Chachomim are always concerned that maybe, to get back to the phrase that they used last week, Choshishin Lelaz, because we'll come back to it now.
What does that mean?
Choshishin means that we are fearful of laws. Laws means that word will go out concerning and people will hear about it and then, you know, witnesses will come as a result of having heard that you know, the husband is suing the wife and they'll come and they say, you know, we saw that she committed adultery.
They want to protect themselves in that
eventuality. Right. Yeah.
Why would there be witnesses that you said that she didn't commit adultery?
That she didn't commit adultery?
No, that she's perfectly honest.
Then, in that particular case, there's no case.
So what claim does the father have at that point?
The father has the claim that this guy is a no good Nick, and he wants to cast aspersions. So that's why we call him the Mosi Shemra. This is the name of this little section over here, right? Mosi Shemra. He's casting aspersions on his daughter, who is a virgin,
right.
And he could prove it. Okay,
right.
So, I mean, theoretically, that's what the Torah says, but. You know, the sages say it doesn't have to be a she, but it has to be, you know, convincing proof that she was a virgin, okay? Maybe the mother can say she had a period just before, something like that, you know, something
that
of that effect. Well, let's face it.
Maybe they didn't know so much about biology.
Okay.
Well, the rabbi examined her before.
She's married to the husband, that he has this claim against her.
Right, but I also explained. Part of the problem arises from the fact that there was a difference in time between the time of Erison, when he betrothed her, literally. In other words, at that point she became his wife, but still they weren't living together yet as husband and wife. That versus when the suin took place a year later, or in Yehuda it was 6 months later, and so on. Okay, so that was a different story. So in other words, what he's claiming is that when he came in, for the wedding night, lo and behold, he finds out that she's not a virgin. He comes into the court the next day, because he says, hey, I wrote a kesuba for 200 zuz on the basis that she's a virgin, and here I'm getting a non-virgin. Okay, yeah. Okay. All right, now we'll see what the buyer has to add over here. Okay. Where are you? Where did you run to? He says, "Dechulei alma chayshin las." He says, you see, there was a machlokes on the other side of the previous page that says, you know, that one is chayshin las, that, you know, we are afraid that somebody is that witnesses will hear about it, and then they'll come in order to the court in order to show that she's not. And the other authority said, "Ein chayshish in the laws," that we're not afraid that the word is going to get around, and so that therefore, under those circumstances, a court of three would be enough, and that's all there is to it, not 23. Yes, David. No, there are the Chesamid Beis right now. Chesamid Beis, right. Beginning with Abaye Omar. Kulei Alma, right. Everybody says, Ein Choshish in the laws. Excuse me, Kulei Alma, Choshish in the laws. Okay. They are afraid, that the word will spread, and that therefore, not only that, but also Mishum Kuvayt and Shal Rishonim. I don't know if you remember that also from the previous page, where we said, the husband demands a court, a bezdin of 23 judges, because he says he could show proof that his wife had sinned. Okay, but when it comes to Pshas Maisa, right, there are no witnesses. Okay, so he said to the court of 23, at least judge my claim, for about the mamonis, that I shouldn't lose all my money and so on, okay? About the, to get this reduction of the ksuba, okay? Of course, as long as it's another monetary claim, and that is that the father has a claim against him, because according to the Torah, if you remember, if the father can prove, that his daughter was a virgin, then in that particular case, the husband is fined mayor kesef. He has to give it to the father, right? And also he can't divorce her. Unless, let's say he's so cruel to her or something like that afterwards, that she could go to the bezdin and say that she would like the union dissolved, and then that would come into a different category called Koyfed Oisei Asher Yoba Rotzani. In other words, they put pressure on the husband to the extent that in the end he says, all right, I'm willing to give it a get. It's a similar problem that we have today with, these guys who are running out on their wives and they want to give them a get. How do you get them to consent to it? So you try all kinds of pressure. If they're decent people, you wouldn't have to do it. But if they're not decent people, then you try to put pressure upon them. that they should grant the divorce to the woman. Okay, so Abaye says everybody's in agreement, first of all, that Chayashin and Lamaz, that we do suspect that the word is going to go out, and also we are concerned about the honor of the first group of judges who are 23, that we want to make sure that we don't simply throw out the rest of the judges and only keep three, that they all have to be there. But what are we dealing with in this case over here? So he says, "Kigon de Isruba stop." He says, over here, the principle is that they simply gave her a general warning. Now, this goes into the problem that we learned a long time ago when we studied the Gemara Makkos, okay? And that is Hasra. Hasra means that you have to give a warning to the person who is about to commit an avera and warn him of what the circumstances are going to be. what the punishment is, and as we'll see in one extreme case, even what is the nature of the punishment. But that has to be, first of all, to deter the person from doing the action, and secondly, in order to stress upon the fact that, look, you're letting yourself open for this and this and this penalty, and so on. Okay? So, according to Abaye, in one case, right, the issue was stopped. In other words, he was given by the person who saw him, by the way, it's the witnesses who have to give the warning, okay? The witnesses tell him, you're not allowed to do that. You're committing an avera. Okay? But what did it say? It didn't say what the penalty is going to be. You understand? So this is stam. Just a general warning he gave. Okay? And the high tanahu, and this is the tana, you know, the chacham and the mishnah, the tanya who learned, okay, that whenever there is the case that involves the death penalty, okay, that in that particular case you have to have the following things. You have to have, first of all, Eidah. Eidah means literally a congregation, but what it really means is a court of 23 to begin with, okay? Of course, you know, if he's subject to the death penalty, then that has to be determined by a court of 23. The Eidim, and you must have witnesses, the Hasra, and also they have to warn the person. The Acha Yodi Yuhu Shehu Chayav Miso Bevesdin. And they have to warn him, you know, that not only that what he's doing is wrong, but also that he's subjecting himself to the death penalty. Okay? Rabbi Yehuna, there he adds another one. He said, Asha Yodi Yuhu Be'ezu Misu Ne'erag. The witnesses have to tell him, not just that, you know, he's going to be, he's subjecting himself to the death penalty, but also to spell out, you know what your death penalty is going to be? It's going to be, let's say, chanika, it's going to be strangulation, or it's going to be skila, it's going to be stoning, okay? Or skila, so herig, herig is they'll knock off his head or something like that. I mean, the way the Romans, it's the way they describe it in the Gemara. You know, so you have to screw the Srefa. Yeah, Srefa is, of course, putting molten lead in the mouth. I mean, these are all delicious penalties, I don't have to tell you. But the point is that, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if you give him the wrong penalty, then he's not subject to it. It's an extreme case, but this is Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, that you have to, the witnesses have to know exactly what penalty he's facing. Okay.
I'm just saying,
Rabbi Papa is the next one. Okay. You know, each one keeps on adding his own, as I said, his own two bits when it comes over here. Okay. All right. So, what does Rabbi Papa add? But Papa Amari says, Hocha b'isha chaver askin. He says, in this particular case, the woman that we're talking about is an isha chavera. She is a woman who is scholarly. You know what they say? If a woman is married to a rov, she can paskin shilas. She's not supposed to, but she has enough experience that she can pass with shyness, right? Actually, in Yiddish, they used to say that the didst, the maid servant in the rabbi's house, knew how to pass with shyness. It's an old Yiddish folk expression. But the point is, we're talking about a woman, he says, who is learned and she knows all about these various laws, etc., etc. So, the same thing applies not just to a woman, it applies to a man as well. namely, Kamiflage Biftuk to the Rabbi Yosef by Yehuda Rabbanan. It says, and here we are dealing with the difference of opinion between Rabbi Yosef by Yehuda and the rabbis. The Tanya Rabbi Yosef by Yehuda Iber, Rabbi Yosef by Yehuda says, Chover ein Tzorich Hasra'a, that somebody who is a scholar does not need Hasra'a, doesn't need warning. Because the purpose of Hasra'a is to tell somebody who doesn't know that, you know, he should, because of his ignorance, he's shogeg, you know, he doesn't know, so to tell him actually what it is so that he doesn't go into Russia, you know, doesn't become a Russia, an evil person, and commit the act that he says he's going to commit, okay? So in other words, Asra is given for the average person, according to Rabbi Yossi. But a scholar does not need Hasra because presumably he knows what the law is, and therefore he has no excuse, you know, for not knowing it. The other one would be an excuse. I made a mistake. I didn't know that it was against the law or something like that. But a chover has to know what the law is. Okay? So therefore it doesn't need Hasra, according to Rabbi Yossi. Right? But of course, if we go according to one who says that we need a court of only three, then in that particular case, we would say that even in such a case, that, you know, if the chover or the chavera did not get official warning, then in that particular case, you can't inflict a death penalty upon them. This is what we're saying, okay? But remember, essentially we're dealing with the death penalty over here, although Malchus too is a case of Hasra, okay? And naturally, in general, what do we try to do? We try to prevent people, you know, from doing the wrong thing. There's no question about it. Okay. Ravashi Omar, Ravashi says, Kigon, and now we go into the next page over there, Dafter Samad Aleph, says, for example, here is a case, the Isru Bey Malchus, what if they gave him Hasra, they gave him warning, but they said that he's subject to lashes, right? And they didn't tell him that he's subject to the death penalty. And this goes into the machlokes, into the difference of opinion between Rabbi Yishmael and the sages. Ditnam, as we learned. We learned that Marcos Bishlesha, right? That Marcos, normally a case that involves where the penalty would be giving lashes, so a court of three is enough to decide that, right? But Ravina Amar, wait a minute, did I skip over there? Yeah. But Bishum Rabbi Yishmael, but in the name of Rabbi Yishmael, Omru, they said, Be Esrim Ishlosha. That with Malkos you should have actually a court of 23. Why? Because it might develop into a case which involves a death penalty. But if we follow the first opinion and we say that, you know, they warned him that he would get Malkos for doing wrong, and in that particular case you do not inflict the death penalty. Of course, you only warn them specifically about Malkos and not about Katola, in other words, being put to death. Ravina comes into a different idea. Ravina Omar, Kigon Shanimso Echabido Edim Korev Ekosel, says, a case over here involves something where one of the witnesses is either a relative or he's one of the witnesses that are puzzled, that are not allowed, you know, to be accepted as witnesses because of character problems, okay? Relative we can understand. But we have to also understand this. He cannot be a relative, A, either to any of the litigants or anything like that. this we can understand, right? But also he cannot be even a relative to the other witness. They're not allowed to be related to each other. They have to be, you know, two different people with no relation between them, okay? And their point of difference is Bifluchta the Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi the Rabbi. The difference of opinion between Rabbi Yosef and between Rabbi Yehuda Adossi. Aliba, the Rabbi Akiva, in connection with the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, the Tanan, where we learn, Rabbi Akiva Omer, he says, Lo bo shlishi elo lachmir alof la says dinai ki yotze ba'im. Okay. So now I have to explain what this means. Okay. Let me take a drink for a moment and we'll explain. We have two different psukim in the Torah. One of them says, Al pishnayim einim, right? Yumas habeis. Okay. Yeah. In other words, if a person deserves it, that has to be on the testimony of two witnesses. Okay. Then another pasuk says, Al pi shnai edim or shlosha edim. Two witnesses or three witnesses. So Rabbi Akiva asked the question, why do they mention three witnesses?